cliffcentral.com.
Isn't that nice? I mean, you give me a lot of shit for the songs I choose, Ben. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, that was a good one.
All right, thank you.
But every now and again, you do just really let yourself down.
Okay, thanks very much. Luckily for all of us, my days of programming music on a radio station are over.
But if I didn't tell you that, you wouldn't play nice songs.
That's true.
Yeah.
Keep the standard high. All right, I'm thrilled to meet Siobhan Scallon. She was actually on with Dr. Cindy at some point last year, and she was looking for lungs. There was a bilateral lung transplant that we needed to do, and it's very, very hard to get organ donors, to get enough organs, so there are not enough people on the list, and so on, and we're going to find out all about organ donors as well in a moment or two. But let's welcome her to the studio and find out about how she's doing and all the rest of it. You get the big fanfare this morning. So let's talk to Siobhan. This is an incredible story, Siobhan. It's basically you've got a second lease on life.
Yes.
And I heard you're doing really well.
No, yeah, life's amazing now.
You could have been dead.
Yes, basically.
I mean, I hate to be blunt about it, but that's probably what would have happened if you hadn't found a pair of lungs, right?
Yeah, that's the reality of it.
But what I hear is that you're doing really, really well. So tell me what it's been like since September.
Well, initially, not fantastic because I had a really rough surgery. And so I spent about a month in ICU. But since getting out of hospital, I've just been going from strength to strength. And I'd say as of January this year, life is just incredible.
Well, I'm really happy for you, and I'm obviously happy for everybody who loves you too, because they get to have you around, which would have not been the story if it hadn't gone so well. But this is a really traumatic surgery to go through. I mean, your lungs are right in the middle of everything, and you kind of have to, they have to do a lot to affect this transplant. This is not an easy operation. Cardiothoracic surgeons. It must have been a long operation too, right?
Yeah, it's about, my surgery was about 10, 11 hours.
Wow.
And I had a few complications that they knew going in. I've got quite a few venous issues. So at one point I actually bled out on the table.
Aye.
And, but yeah, I had an amazing team of doctors and surgeons and anaesthetists. And I mean, it's incredible the number of people involved on the team. And they kept me alive.
Well, you're here.
Yeah.
You're living proof of that. Now, let's just go back to before then. What was wrong with your original lungs?
So I have a genetic condition called cystic fibrosis.
Okay.
And so that's basically, it has several effects all over the body, but the most damaging problem is that it causes an excess buildup of mucus in the lungs. So over time, you are highly
basically
susceptible.
drown
and then get frequent lung infections.
Sure.
Which lead to permanent damage over time. And so it just got to a point where basically my lungs were.
How old were you when you had the operation done last year in September?
29.
29 years old. And do you know who these lungs come from?
No. So they keep that anonymous,
okay.
I think, to protect both the recipients as well as the donor and the donor family.
I mean, they say that we can eventually swap organs with pigs and things.
Yeah, they are working on that. We're not there yet.
I mean, that would be great, right? It would be. Then at least there's proper... there's parity between us and all other animals when we can have each other's organs. Then we know for sure that we've started to understand our place in the scheme of things. But you have no idea who this is.
No idea at all. I don't.
So you can't even express that gratitude to anyone in particular?
No, I've invented an imaginary friend that I've, in my mind, my donor was a young female. I don't know. It's just, for me, I've just invented someone.
That's okay.
And I've written to the donor family anonymously to try and express my thanks, although I don't think I could ever possibly put it into words adequately. I don't even know the gender, age. I don't know anything. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're doing as well as you are. And it seems to me that you said you're going from strength to strength. You're fit. You're doing some stuff you couldn't do before.
Yes. Yeah, I've gone back to dancing. I always used to dance when I was younger, but then as I got older and sicker, it was just impossible. I was on oxygen 24 hours a day, so I couldn't.
Really? Is that what life was like?
Yeah, I was pretty incapacitated. I had moved back in with my parents, and they were looking after me all the time, and my life was pretty crap. I'm not gonna lie.
Jeez, yeah.
Yeah, and very sick and constantly in hospital and on IV antibiotics, and there wasn't much going on. It's very, very different now.
What a story. You see how everything can change.
Yeah, no, it's incredible.
You're living proof of that. All right, so we're going to talk to Siobhan a little bit more, but we also got Gillian Walker in here, who's from the Organ Donor Foundation. Gillian, how are you this morning? Let me just put on your microphone, because I have that on someone else for the moment. It's very disorganized sometimes. How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Good.
It's obviously better because Siobhan's doing so great.
Yeah. This is a real success story and shows you the power of what you guys do at the Organ Donor Foundation, and also the kind of incredible life-enhancing things that can happen for people who are recipients of these organs. Mm. And obviously the important contribution made by all the organ donors themselves. So have we got enough lungs and hearts and livers and all kinds of other things that we need? Nowhere near.
So we have, South Africa has about 0.2% of the population registered as organ donors, which is, I mean, just so much lower than elsewhere in the world. So the States has, I don't know, like over 30%, Australia as well, high up like that, and UK as well. So we have a really low rate of registration.
Do we know why?
I think that a lot of people hide behind the excuse of cultural and religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And also just like awareness. So many people don't know about it. And also they might say, oh, yeah, I thought about transplants, but I just never got around to registering.
So they're basically a whole lot of people being, I mean, these are people who died anyway. It's not like you harvest from the living.
Exactly.
And they would have died anyway, and then they just, you know, those organs go to waste, effectively.
Exactly.
Sometimes very good organs, not like Mabali. Now, Mabali is a good example. She's an organ donor. She's a registered organ donor. But her whole body's a wreck. I mean, there's not much you could use there. The liver has been poisoned by alcohol abuse. The the lungs are not so great from asthma. She said she's got a cataract in her one eye. I mean, what can you use from Mabali? What could you harvest out of her?
You could use a tissue. So if she's, I mean, her cornea would probably still be okay, even though she's...
All right, we'll take that.
And her bones...
So she shouldn't delist in embarrassment.
No. You know, her skin, her bones, heart valves.
That. All right, yeah. Thanks, Mubs. Yeah, we'll take all of that, all right? Still good? Yeah, she says that's fine. She's happy to be useful. But when you talk about this, because for a lot of people, it's about their bodily integrity for some reason. They think that after they're dead, that it's important that they're buried whole or whatever, right? Is that the main argument you get?
Yeah, that is an excuse. And a lot of people will say, will my body be disfigured? And I think because like an open casket is an open casket funeral is important to some people, but actually it's just like a normal operation, and you know the doctors like will sew you up just like any operation with integrity and respect, and then you can have an open casket funeral. Well, even if your cornea are taken.
If that's something you want.
If that's something that you want.
I think it's pretty grisly. If you ask me.
Well, I think so too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you're going to burn your body, you know, be cremated, like you might as well take your good organs out before
and let
you
them
do
be
so.
Used. How exactly. long can you keep an organ for?
Well, it's called the ischemic time. It's the time that an organ can go without blood flow, and it does vary. It's like mostly about 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours.
Really? So you have to but get it quickly, huh?
Yeah. Which is why with organ transplants, it's usually only, well, it is only when a patient dies in hospital, so like on a ventilator, once they've got brainstem death. But tissue can go much longer. So your bones and skin, cornea, heart valves, they can last like 12 hours or sometimes longer. So if you die, for example, in an accident, your tissue could still be used.
Wow. Do we have, a figure on how often it occurs that someone dies in hospital and someone in that hospital needs the transplant and it just works, because it's a minuscule amount of overlap.
Yeah, well, they would fly the organs. So they'd kind of coordinate it. If someone has brainstem death in hospital, they would keep them on a ventilator, treat them like an ICU patient. Mm-hmm. And then, like with Siobhan, she got her call on in the afternoon, and then the next day they kept the patient on a ventilator, and the next day they started her transplant, and then the doctor actually flew to the donor hospital and brought the organs to her.
This sounds to me like it still has to be that there's got to be some kind of miraculous overlap here. I mean, it doesn't just happen.
Yeah,
You've got lists and things, and there's all the preparation in the world, but really timing is not on your side if you've only got a few hours.
Exactly, and it has to be a perfect match as well.
Of course.
So there's your blood type, but also with kidneys, there's a lot of more complicated matching that I don't fully understand because I'm not medical. But even
in the transplant sort of part of medicine, we're only really starting to figure out some of these things now, even though it's been going on since Chris Barnard did that first heart transplant here in South Africa all those years ago in the 60s. We're still figuring out a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
And there's some organs that you cannot transplant. They just don't work so well in another body, or they don't live long enough, or they don't match up properly.
Mm-hmm. I believe in the States they pretty much transplant everything.
Do you think we'll ever get to the stage where we could do a brain transplant, and then I could just use Flax or Pashida's body and I could put my brain in them when this body gives out? I mean, that would be good for me.
Perhaps do some research and see if they can pull it off for you.
No, look, I mean, the brain's obviously a lot more complicated. You've got all those neural connections. But lungs are complicated enough. Because, again, you've got the neural connections that you have to do that make things operate properly. But then you've got all those veins and arteries. And the lungs are, and for some people this is grisly stuff, but I think that it's necessary to talk about this because I think, you know, it might affect a whole lot more people than you think, and it might affect someone that you know, if not you yourself. So the lungs, you've got to, and they're complicated sort of routes for the blood to flow, because the lungs are where the oxygen is added and the carbon dioxide is taken out. And so they're very complicated circulatory organs, if not just organs for the purposes of bringing useful oxygen into red blood cells.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
That's why it took
that
10 hours, right?
Yeah.
So when you think about this stuff, do you get a bit of a cold shiver, Siobhan, because you think, you know, I might not have made it, or the chances of this actually working were so slim?
No, definitely gives you pause for thought. Lung transplants are particularly risky. I think they were one of the last transplants to happen successfully. It's also because until recently, there's not really a very good substitute for breathing.
No, we haven't figured out a better way to do that yet. Yeah.
So at least with kidneys, there's dialysis. So if things go wrong, you're not necessarily going to die straight away. The surgery is incredibly difficult, and I'm very grateful to the team of doctors here and surgeons. They're just incredible. We have some pretty awesome doctors in this
country.
Must
have been amazing. Do you feel when you take a big deep breath sometimes, first of all, that you can do that is incredible, right? But do you sometimes feel like sometimes people say that when you have these transplants, you almost feel you have a little bit of that person in your mind as well, not just in your body?
So I have heard some ridiculous things. I often make jokes about it and say I've clearly got the lungs of an 18-year-old boy because I'm up to no good.
Yeah, but you can always blame that, you know. You can always say, oh, well, that comes from the lungs. Don't blame me.
Like, it's not me. No. My hormones are wrong.
Right, exactly. It's not your fault.
But no, I don't think any of that's true. I think it's
mechanical and biological to you. It's not.
I haven't taken on any of the characteristics of my donor. I do joke about it.
But it's kind of funny that your lungs are a different DNA to the rest of you.
Yeah, well, I mean, in my case, it's fortunate because my DNA is a load of rubbish.
You think?
Well, it is. Well, it's with the genetically, fibrosis, right? Yeah. It's defective. So for me, it's fantastic that my lungs are, have someone else's DNA because now they don't have any of the cystic fibrosis characteristics.
Right.
So I can breathe and I don't have phlegm. And
And what kind of prognosis do they give you for something like this? When they say to you, we're going to do it, I mean, you must have found out as we were just discussing, you found out on the day and you had to go in.
Yeah, so, well, again,
it's not like you could prepare.
No, I mean, well, you're on the waiting list. I was on the waiting list nearly 2 years. So you are sort of prepared, but I don't think anything can prepare you really for it. In fact, when I got the call, my phone was on silent for one because I was busy doing work. And so I missed my call, actually.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
That's the one call you don't want to miss.
Yeah. And so they called the house phone. Unfortunately, my dad answered and called me. But the transplant coordinator's phone all the time just to chit-chat. And so I was honestly about to tell my dad to please take a message because I was busy. And so, but then took the call because I thought it might be rude. And then they're like, hi, how are you? And I was like, oh, I don't have time for this conversation. Really, I've got stuff to do.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we've got some news. We found your lungs. And I think my stomach just fell through the floor. Wow. I was in such shock and I was devastated. It wasn't necessarily an exciting time. I was terrified.
Sure.
Actually, initially told the transplant coordinator that I needed to think about it and I would phone her back.
But of course you would. first of all, you might not make it through the operation. So
yeah.
even though you're living in great pain and with huge difficulty, you almost want to keep doing that rather than take the chance in case it doesn't work out, because then you're gone.
Yeah, I mean, I think with a lot of people who are chronically ill, denial becomes your best friend because you have to find a way to get up every morning. And even though I was at home living with my parents at 29 and on oxygen 24 hours a day and I had to stop work, and I still had found a way to be happy. I still saw my friends, and even if it was, you know, involving a lot of cups of tea and crocheting,
yeah,
and other cool things that 29-year-olds are not meant to be doing. You know, I still found a, you know, I had meaning in my life, even though I think from the outside people would think my life was terrible.
Mm.
And so I kept on saying to myself, I'd rather have this than nothing. So there are no guarantees with transplants. And so I was terrified and I just thought, okay, I'm going to go die tomorrow.
Yeah.
But luckily, I phoned my doctor and she obviously couldn't tell me what to do. But she, you know, said to me, you think you're fine now, but the next lung infection could be your last. And, you know, basically the stars are aligned. It's a perfect match. The A team of surgeons and doctors are on call at the moment. You know, this is your window of opportunity. So I put on my big girl pants and I phoned the transplant coordinator back and I said, cool, can I please have the lungs? Wow. And but it was a terrifying moment. But yeah.
What can you do now that you couldn't do before? Besides breathe and walk around and do normal stuff without an oxygen tank trailing behind you?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's really nothing I can't do. I'm physically active, I'm going out, having fun. I'm basically like any other normal person my age. I would say there's no
You're
limitations.
Living.
I'm alive.
You're
yeah.
Living. Yeah. But it makes it so much more real when you almost weren't.
Yeah, I mean, I think I possibly have an appreciation for life that I don't know that. I mean, I don't think that everyone will, you know, maybe for the best, they don't have the opportunity to realize just how precious life is. And I think I've seen that in a way that, yeah, has made me incredibly grateful. I mean, I now, when I live each day to the full, I mean, I literally do. My brother keeps on shouting me to stop burning the candle at both ends. But it's literally a case of, this might be taken away from me at any moment. And I've seen what it's like to, you know, have no quality of life. So now I don't say no to anything. And, just really having an awesome time.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
What was the first thing you did when you realized that you could breathe normally, do normal things? What was the first thing you wanted to do that you'd never been able to do before?
Sing.
Really?
Not very well, but I love singing.
Oh, really?
And but I couldn't do it very successfully because I couldn't breathe. So, yeah, now my car is my studio and I just
That's all right.
Screech.
We're all like that, so you don't have to feel bad. Plus, I'm not judging idols right now, and I'm not going to make you sing.
Oh, yeah, no, please.
Is this stuff that you can't do?
Not that I can't do, but there are things that, I mean, I do have to take precautions. So,
sure.
As much as, you know, I've got a new lease of life, it's not without parameters. I have to take immunosuppressants every day, which prevents the rejection of the organs. And so the downside of the immunosuppressants is that
you get sick.
You are highly susceptible to infection. So
winter sucks.
Yeah, winter sucks. So I've got to be particularly careful around crowds, sick people I avoid, children I avoid.
Yes.
They're just germs generally. And so I've just got to be careful. I'm a bit OCD about hygiene.
Do you stay that way? It's good.
Yeah.
Trust me, I've been there my whole life. The best place to be.
So and I've just got to take extra good care of my health, and but I mean, other than that, and yeah, there's nothing that I can't do.
And they say you'll live as long as, you know, everybody else. No.
I wish that was the case. Unfortunately, no. The lungs are particularly, the life expectancy post lung transplant is not fantastic. I think the survival rate sort of across the world is about 50% are still alive after 5 years, which isn't a fantastic statistic. But at the same time, there are patients now, the oldest or longest surviving transplant patients are 25 years post-transplant.
Wow.
So I aim to be one of those, at least. But yeah, I mean, it's very difficult. You know, there is always the constant risk of rejection or infection.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you just have to look at it in the context of, even if I only get 5 years, or even if I died tomorrow, quite frankly, I mean, I've got 8 extra months that I probably wouldn't have had. And 8 good months, I think, is also the important, you know, qualification there. That it would have been, I could have maybe had 2 years more on oxygen, but I mean, I think quality is more important
than
quantity.
Well, this is terrific. I mean, the story like this should really impress upon people the reasons that we have an organ donor foundation. For those who've never heard of you guys and don't know the first thing about you, if they felt that they could be useful to someone else, like whoever the donor of in this case, the Siobhan might be, how can they get hold of you guys? How can they get involved? How can they get on the list?
Well, the easiest way to, and the quickest way to register is online, www.odf.org.za, or you could call the toll-free line, which is 0800-226-611. And even if you think that your organs may not be great, just register anyway if you believe in it, because you never know what could be used, and the tests and stuff are done at the time of death.
And you and Siobhan are friends. You've been friends for a long time, right?
Yeah, we've pretty much grown up alongside each other, which is why I've got involved in the Organ Donor Foundation.
You weren't involved until Siobhan got
it was only when she was listed that I realized that, that the chances weren't great, that there wasn't enough awareness. And so I got involved kind of on a voluntary basis. And then last year I started working for them.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Just to see how the impact of this one person's life, in this case it's you, Siobhan, look at how you've changed your own life for the better, but you've also had such a change for Jillian. I mean, this is quite something.
Yeah, it's definitely enriched my life. And when I think about, you know, how well she's doing now, it inspires me and it makes the work that I do worth it.
Mm.
So I often like to tell her story to people to inspire them to do the same thing and to register.
No.
And you see the difference that it's made to her life. You know, why wouldn't you register?
Right. So when you register to be an organ donor, do you stipulate what organs you're prepared to donate, or do the hospital decide that?
You just register. And then if there is something that you don't want to donate, some people are freaked out about donating their cornea. You need to tell your family about that, because even though you've registered, your family have to consent. They have to sign it off, you know, at the end of the day. So so discuss it with your family, and then they can explain that.
Hey, Siobhan, I heard that they took your old lungs and gave them to some old dude, and he's wheezing and coughing and wheeling around town. Is that true?
I think they probably just threw those things away.
No good, huh?
I don't think, yeah, maybe, I don't even think dogs would want to eat those things.
So there's no separation anxiety from your old lungs.
No, I don't miss them at all.
Well, listen, what a happy story. I'm glad it's got a happy ending. And just keep doing the terrific work that you guys at the Organ Donor Foundation are doing, Gillian. Siobhan, you're a living, breathing example of what can be done here by people who need to be on this list. Say it yourself, because I think you probably have more feeling when it comes to this than anyone else. You're a beneficiary of what organ donation is. Tell everybody what it means.
Well, yeah, I really can't put it into words how my life has changed. And I literally wouldn't be here today if it was not for the most heroic decision of my donor and my donor's family to donate my donor's organs. And I'm incredibly grateful. And you have the potential opportunity to change and save up to 8 people's lives when you die. And I don't know how you would want to turn that opportunity down.
Costs you nothing.
Yeah.
Costs you nothing. You don't lose anything, right? Mm,
absolutely.
Do it.
Yeah.
We should all be doing this. Put yourself to some use.
I think you have to ask yourself, if you were in end-stage organ failure, would you accept a new organ from someone else? Like, would you receive an organ to save your life?
Who wouldn't?
Exactly. Mm. And if you would, then why wouldn't you donate?
Exactly. Spot on. Couldn't say it better. By the way, the big reveal, the reason we brought you in here this morning is to let you know that the new lungs you have are actually from Muammar Gaddafi. So I hope you don't mind. It's an evil North African dictator. But hey, they work for you.
At least he's doing some good now.
No, listen, this is terrific. Guys, well done. And congratulations, Siobhan. I think it's a terrific thing that's happened for you here. And, you know, you're a hero too. You pulled through that 10-hour operation. That's no messing around.
Yeah.
And well done to the doctors. Well done to the Organ Donor Foundation and to everybody involved in this. It's nice to have a happy story, especially on a Monday morning, right?
Yeah.
When everybody's very depressed about the sports results and all that other crap. What matters to you more now than it did before? Are there things in your life that you think of and you think, well, I have an appreciation apart from life itself for this far more than I ever did before? And what doesn't really get you angry and fired up anymore?
I used to watch the Kardashians.
You don't do that anymore.
I cannot stand them anymore.
This is big. This is big. All right.
I think it's because I didn't have oxygen going to my brain at the time. So I had capacity to watch them, but now that I can breathe again, I can't watch them.
This is so great. This is probably the most valuable contribution for many of us. So in other words, you're saying, healthy people of the world, you're wasting your lungs and you're wasting your brains on the Kardashians.
Yeah.
Stop.
If you have oxygen going to your brain, I suggest you don't waste it on the Kardashians anymore.
Well, thank you very much. And well done to you. I hope that you have many, many years of happy life and that your family are around to kind of see the joy that this transplant has brought you, and also the fact that you can now do things that you never did before. It's terrific. Makes me very happy. All right. Well done. Siobhan Scallon, Gillian Walker, thank you both very much for coming in. And please, if you haven't thought about it before, look into this. Let's all get on this organ donor list. I used to joke that I didn't want to get on because I thought they'd harvest me while I was alive. But they won't. I promise you they're not going to pitch up with scythes and knives and scalpels at your house while you're living your normal life. They'll only come for you when you're finished. When it's all over. Then there's no conspiracy to harvest you while you're living. So relax. Even Mabale is an organ donor and she's paranoid about everything. Mavs, do you hear that? We can still use some parts of you. Aren't you thrilled?
You know, there is nothing better than being useful in life. So I am relieved. Thank you.
Damn right. All right. Very, very good. Well, listen, thank you for joining us this morning. Let's wrap it up with a little unnews. Our guests, Gillian Walker and Siobhan Scallon, give us that email, the website address for the Organ Donor Foundation again.
It's odf.org.za.
odf.org.za. Go and check them out and see whether you could be helpful and useful. to someone else. When you're gone, when it's finished for you, it's terrific. This is an all-win situation as opposed to a no-win situation. And be more useful than you even thought you could be. Even if you were a complete waste of time while you were alive, you could be useful in death. CliffCentral.com